Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and this is Marek Larwood.
Hello, people who like films. Welcome, new listeners. Goodbye, people who've stopped listening already.
Who are just about to stop listening.
What is this about? It's two men in a room talking about films they've seen and going off on tangents. If you don't like it, don't blooming listen.
That's very true. If you do like it, thanks a lot. Very decent of you.
I thought I wanted to go for an aggressive start.
Yeah.
Because I've listened to some other film podcasts, and the people just don't want to know what is going to happen. So do I want to invest my time in listening to these people? What is going to happen? So I'd get it out of the way. That's what's going to happen, all right?
We're going to talk about a film, then we'll read some of your letters, then we'll talk about another film, and then we'll leave.
This week, well, I'll leave because you live here.
Yeah, I do live here. So does Buddy the dog.
Buddy is a person or animal responsible for any extraneous... Is that the right word?
Sure.
Extraneous noise you may hear in the background.
He's also a great excuse for all of the squeaking and chewing that we do during
I don't do any of that.
Uh-huh.
This week, we've gone to revisit some old films, as there is a... I can't think of the word... I think I'm getting at. Dearth of films on the cinema.
Yeah.
So we thought we'd pick up a couple of classics that we should have seen, but we haven't seen. We watched one each.
Yeah. So let's see if that was worth doing.
Let's see if they can guess what this film you watched. Should we do yours first?
Sure.
It's the first ever sci-fi film.
The first feature-length sci-fi film. 1927, I believe, is when it was from.
That's clue one. Clue two?
Clue two.
Begins with M.
The film begins with M. And the director is famous for two films beginning with M.
Clue three, it's Metropolis.
Yeah, clue three, yeah. Fritz Lang's Metropolis, which is famously the first feature-length sci-fi, as we've already said. It is Hitler's favourite film, I discovered, doing a bit of reading.
Oh, yeah, it's good.
That's a sehr good sci-fi.
I wonder if it's had an effect, because when I think of Metropolis, I think of the famous posters.
Yes.
Did this change the way...
Huge influence on the visuals of films and sci-fi, obviously all sci-fi afterwards. But not only that genre. For instance, the writers and creators of Superman named the city Clark Kent lives in after this film because they like the visuals so much. And Fritz Lang himself was inspired by the visuals for his Metropolis, this future dystopia, after seeing New York for the first time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm sure the posts have influenced things.
And C-3PO is based on the robot in Metropolis as well. The look of C-3PO.
I have only seen clips of this. I'm ashamed to say I have never watched Metropolis. Please explain to me. It's one of those films I did when I did film studies, and we're supposed to watch Battleship Potemkin.
Yeah.
And which is the one you get to watch Metropolis. I went to watch Double Identity.
Yeah.
And Casablanca and the 39 Steps. I saw those, but I missed the first couple because I was too busy trying to get off with girls. What happens in Metropolis?
You missed out, mate.
Does anyone get off anyone?
Yes, but not until the very end. Like films spoilers. Should be.
Spoilers!
Yeah, it came out in 1927. If you can't spoiler it now...
It is 87 years old, you can't do spoilers.
Okay, well, basically, the brief synopsis without too many spoilers is it's set in a dystopian future city in the year 2000... called...
Hang on a minute.
Yeah, called Metropolis, I assume. And there is huge class division of the wealthy right at the top and all of the workers who live in a city under the ground, basically just going to work to feed the machine and, you know, getting in accidents and dying and going around, whilst the children of the ruling class is just frolicking pleasure gardens doing absolutely nothing.
That sounds nice.
And the lead in it is the son of the ruler of Metropolis, who one day sees this woman called Maria, who breaks into, who barges into the offices of his dad with a load of the children of the workers, so they can see how the elite live.
Do you know what? I think I have seen it.
Yeah,
I think I've seen bits of it on TV from when I've been a kid. You know, black and white. Yeah, yeah. Been on, and I've seen probably bits and bobs without even realising.
But the lead guy, anyway, I think his name is Frieda. No, that's the girl's name, isn't it? yeah, it's Frieda. Frieda. No, it's Frieda. It is his name. He then wants to find out more about this woman, and so pursues her and ends up getting him seeing for the first time how the workers live. And it's got that class struggle at its heart. But then there is also this real sci-fi thing that there is a crazy scientist inventor called Dr. Rotwang. And
hang on a minute.
Yeah, he's called Dr. Rotwang.
What's he trying to invent a cure for his...
He's trying to invent a robot to replace the woman he was in love with, who died in childbirth, giving birth to Frieda, because his wife was stolen by the lord of... the ruler of Metropolis.
Hang on a minute.
Yeah. So, and anyway, then the ruler of Metropolis decides to use the robot... to make her in the image of this revolutionary Maria in order to stop the uprising of the workers and deceive them.
Because everyone wants to bum the robot.
Mm, exactly. And Dr. Rotwang has a mechanical hand, and he is the inspiration for Dr. Strangelove. Strangelove probably being a pun on Rotwang.
How many films? This must have influenced everything.
Huge, huge numbers. You watch it and you go, you know, Brazil is hugely influenced by this film, including the class struggle and the, you know...
What influenced this then?
I assume novels. I assume it's literature that influenced this. But to go back to the Hitler connection, briefly, it is fascinating that that this film is very popular in the Weimar... pre-Second World War era in Germany, and Fritz Lang himself is Jewish, and Goebbels was so fond of this film as well. He said to him, you're an honorary Aryan, we decide who's Jewish and who isn't, which is one of the creepiest things I've ever heard.
Wow.
And he fled to America because he didn't want to be in with them, but they loved it, and but saw it as a template for how the world should be, rather than...
Oh, they as, we got it wrong.
Yeah, well, who knows, but...
And visually, it's quite... I don't want to use the word intoxicating, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly ahead of its time. It was the most expensive film ever made when it came out. If you adjust for inflation, it cost $200 million to make back then in 1927. It nearly bankrupted the company that made it.
And who was it? Was it MGM or something?
It's German. It's a German film.
Oh, okay. I'm just pouring myself a coffee. So, I mean, listeners, you enjoy that sound. It sounds like a coffee advert because it's right next to the speaker. Do you want to pour a coffee as well?
So sure, can I'll pour a coffee
listen
as well.
To us having coffee. I just finished going to the toilet in your cup.
Thanks. And now fill up the rest with coffee.
Is it enjoyable to watch?
Oh, it certainly is. It's, you know, you can't really review films that are this old and this influential, I think, because you've got to view them in a completely different way. They're like museum exhibits rather than movies these days. It's only 2 hours long, you know. And it,
only?
Well, you know, that's not bad, you know, going for a film that's quite slow at times. And because it's silent, there's just music and, you know, it's... You sometimes are going, what's happening? It's also been reconstructed from... They lost whole parts of it for decades, and then they found them in the archive. A film historian found brand new bits in the archives of a museum and all sorts. And so it's been released in many different versions over time as well. There was even a version, I believe, done with a new soundtrack added by Queen and other 80s bands and stuff, which I'd love to see because... You know, it's been hugely influential on the Flash Gordon film and everything else. But it's...
So this basically makes everything you see now feel like it's been stolen.
Well, no, it makes sense. It contextualises it. It's like this did it first, you know, in the skyscrapers of... planes. There's wonderful. It's, you know, the thing we're now used to ever since Blade Runner is the flying cars amongst the skyscrapers. It did it first, but they're all biplanes. So you've got, like, you know, the...
It's a bit like when you find someone, one of your friends, or not a friend, someone who's a real arsehole, and you meet their parents, and they're both arseholes. You go, that's where it came from.
Yeah, but, I mean, Dr. Rotwang is excellent. He's an excellent character. No, it's great, but it's ahead of its time in many ways. Well, I don't know. I don't know the cinema of that period, but it surprised me in how sort of... poetic it was with its cinematography and stuff, because there are dream sequences, almost visions, where the main character sees all of the workers at work on the big machine, and then has this sort of weird vision where he sees them marching in their hundreds into the mouth of it. Like, it's now got a mouth. They're going up these stairs and just being consumed by the machine. And that's what he sees when there's an accident with the machine because they're being worked too hard and loads of people die. And he goes, well, that's an inevitability of what we're doing here. We're actually just feeding the workers to this. And it's very evocative. It's arresting. It's sort of one, if you like films, you have to see, I'd say.
I've got to watch it. Is it available just on YouTube or something, I presume?
Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime. Taking all our films, and what they'll do is they'll do it cheap first of all.
Yeah.
To get the people in, and they'll start putting their prices up. I'm worried about Amazon taking over everything.
Well, it's going to be them or one of the others, isn't it? I mean, Netflix is, I think, still just Netflix for now, but like Blinkbox is now owned by Tesco's and... Now TV is Sky.
I feel I should be worried, but again, I'm really pleased I can get stuff cheap. So how many Davies do you give it? It's probably difficult to mark,
I think it's impossible to say. Like, it's super naive in lots of ways because we have built on what they started, you know? It's a fascinating, fascinating piece of history. And just, it's about something, and it's amazing. There's whole sequences of, you know, like they flood the entire set at one point, and just like there are hundreds upon hundreds of extras in it and stuff. It's worth seeing for the spectacle alone. But obviously the print hasn't survived that well. You know, it's sometimes hard to tell what's happening, but other times you're just like, that's great.
Hey David.
Yeah.
Do you think that we're living in a place like Metropolis now? You think it's come true?
Yeah, I think it's probably always been true since sort of the Victorian era onwards, really.
Oh shit. So there we go, Metropolis. I'll tell you what, say I've got an opinion, I'm listening to this, I've managed to stay listening for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That sounds really insulting.
No, that's fine. It's fair, I think.
I want to say something.
Yeah.
How do I communicate with us?
Well, if you, you know, went to film school or did film studies at university and want to repeat your thesis on Metropolis to us, then why not email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, or talk to each other about it and ignore us entirely by going to Facebook.com/filmfandango. Or you can tweet us at Mr. David Reed, at Marek Larwood, or at Film Fandango.
Oh, guess what?
What?
Oh, yeah, also, you can donate to help our podcast as well, because we do it, but we're self-funded, and we pay for everything ourselves, and it costs over £80 billion. If you want to donate, you can go to Dear Film.
No.
You can go to filmfandango.co.uk.
That's the one.
Click on the donate button. I really appreciate it. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. You are the reason you can still hear us each week. So good on you.
Here's an email.
Oh, yeah. Who wants what?
Do you want to read it?
You read it. I've been talking a bit.
Okay. Hull accent. What's Hull?
All.
Like, yeah, just go like that. Hello, gents and gear nines. This is entitled Rubbish Blue Films, this.
Okay.
Because I said all blue films are good.
All films with blue in the title are good.
Not all blue films are good.
That's right.
Sorry. Oh, dearing me. Yes. Anyway, Rubbish Blue Films. From Kieran Hall's emailed in. Ah, gents and gear nines. My title sounds like crap born. But nevertheless, a submission for all blue films being good. A surfing film where stuff happens, I'll be honest. I lost interest reading the IMDb summary. So this smashes apart the good blue films theory from Marek. I give you Blue Crush. Also, since Marek's breakdown, what the is it when I went a bit... I got angry a few episodes ago. Since Marek's breakdown, he seems to have increased massively his pretensiousness. Is it pretentiousness?
Pretentiousness.
In many ways, it would be better for his health to watch films, I think. Please don't be mad about this, Marek. Well, I'm getting mad. You've not even made sense. Watching films... If you're going to criticise me and say that I'm pretentious, say it properly and blooming... I don't know what... Make your point properly. I think he wants me
to... Read your email before you send. You click send.
I agree. I looked at this Blue Crush film. Yeah. I've not seen it. It's 2002. It looks like it's awful. And there was a sequel 9 years later, a straight-to-video, Blue Crush 2. We both looked at this email beforehand. Yeah, we can read, all right? Yeah. And we both talked about the film we remembered...
Blue Juice.
Which was 1995.
1995 surf film starring Catherine Zeta-Jones.
And Sean Pertwee.
Yeah.
Based in St Ives or Cornwall somewhere.
Somewhere like that. Which I can't even recall if I've seen it. I'm just sort of aware of it.
I remember getting out on DVD, I think, or something, when I was about 19, when it came out. I think it was awful.
So Ewan McGregor's in it?
Yes, and so watching on... Was it just after Trainspotting, I mean?
Okay, 95,
and
yeah.
Sean Pertwee was cool as well. Catherine Jones is awful. Don't watch Blue Juice. But it has helped me amend my theory.
Yeah.
Is that, obviously, a lot of surfing films are called blue.
Blue, yeah. Oh, a lot of sea films. A lot of sea films, isn't it? Like Big Blue, somebody mentioned in another email to us, which is a... French, I believe, film about free diving, and it's got Jean Reno as an Italian in it. Who's
it's very
brilliant.
Good. It's very good.
I used to really like that film. I can't. I've not seen it recently.
It was. It's quite an old film, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they're all. What I'm looking up now. 1988, The Big Blue.
Yeah. It's about a man who's basically at his happiest underwater.
Yeah, it was really enjoyable though.
Yeah,
it's quite a slow film, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's
a romance, isn't it? Isn't Rosanna Arquette in it?
Yes, she blooming is.
Yeah.
How do you remember all these names?
I don't know, it's just how my brain sort of works.
Autistic.
Yeah, probably.
So I'm going to amend the theory. First of all, I'm going to apologise for saying it's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing. I take it as a compliment.
My theory is that blue films with blue title are good, minus surf films. Brackets minus surf films.
Okay, interesting. Well, let's see if anyone the Gauntlet's cast. See if anyone can prove you wrong with that one. And we're still going to make Blue Zombie, yeah? We're still going to make Blue Zombie.
Yeah, but what was Blue Zombie again? I can't
Blue
remember.
Blue Zombie
plot.
Was the where all of the police become zombies, and so the criminals have to be released to defeat them.
What's amazing is that Mike, I have no memory whatsoever of anything. You can remember stuff, so that's why I'm so full of joy the whole time, I think.
Yeah, probably. And I'm so grumpy all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, well, if you can think of a film with blue in the title that is terrible, then do let us know.
Oh, there's another email.
What do they want?
It is someone from Aberdeen. I mean, they must love us up in Scotland.
Why is that?
Because we've got a lot of Scottish people email in lately.
Have we?
Anyway, short turn to do some reading. Aberdeen!
I don't know what the Aberdeen accent is. Hi, David, Marek, Buddy, and fingers crossed, Danielle. Bad luck, dickhead. Regarding the question of a cast...
You can't call him a dickhead.
Can you not?
No.
Sorry, Terry.
Terry donated into the blooming show as well. I'm really generous.
He did that anonymously, and you've just...
Oh, did he?
Well, everyone does.
Well,
he might not want it broadcast about how generous Terry is compared to some other listeners. He might not want that broadcast about how he's a hero.
I am defending Terry. All right, sorry, Terry.
Regarding the question over casting wars, it's my favourite part of the podcast, and I'm guessing lots of other listeners too. It's especially funny when Marek loses. Sorry, Marek.
I'm rescinding that defence.
On recasting Flash Gordon, my choice for replacing Brian Blessed's Prince Voltan would be Timothy Dalton. Seriously, check him out in Chuck or Penny Dreadful. He's gone properly mad. I genuinely thought about casting Timothy Dalton as Voltan when I was looking through
it. It's a clever move.
Because he is now broad and burly, and he's got a strange twinkle in his eye now. If you think about him in Hot Fuzz, I think he could do it. Anyway. Keep up the good work. Terry Forbes, Aberdeen. P.S. You can try an Aberdeen accent if you like, but don't hold me accountable for the download drop-off. P.P.S. Please get Danielle back on more often. I miss her laugh.
Why don't you just go and track her down to something else then?
Well, you can listen to her podcast, Do the Right Thing, if you like. Yes, she'll come on sporadically, I'm sure. Thank you for that. That's from Terry Forbes. Yes, I totally agree. I think because I went for who did I suggest for it? Because you won with Jack Black.
And where's the poster for this then?
It'll be out by now on the Facebook page / Film Fandango. I can't remember who I went for now for Voltan.
I can't remember. We've already established that I've got no memory of anything past 5 seconds.
Well, that's very true. Yeah, we'll have to play the casting game again, get another guest on. It's good fun, isn't it? If you've got any friends who are famous and you think would like to come on our podcast, why not email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com? Because we're running out of people we know, frankly.
I'm not friendly at the best of times.
It's a real turn-off for people when we tell them Marek's involved.
I wonder if it is. It probably is.
No, I don't think so.
Do you ever think, would I like me if I met me?
Oh, that's a depressing question. No, I haven't thought about that so far.
I just thought about it then.
What was your conclusion?
Probably not. Probably go, you're really bringing me down. Okay.
We don't tend to like people who are like us, do we? They tend to be the ones that irritate us the most.
Really?
People who exhibit qualities we don't like in ourselves. It really irks us when they're just there doing it right in our faces.
Yeah. That's why me and Ryan Gosling would never get on.
Yeah, that's right.
I went to go and see... I went to go and see this. I watched this on YouTube.
Okay.
Because I hadn't seen it before and I thought I should. It's always in a sort of list for the top films of all time, top sort of... On IMDb, it's 87th best film, which it's Bicycle Thieves, or the American release, The Bicycle Thief. Which is an Italian film made in 1948. What's scary is it's a black and white film, sort of post-war, in the sort of depression-ish bit where there was a lack of jobs and work in Modena, or how do you say it? It's set in. It was made in 1948, and I thought, oh, that seems like it's ages ago. I worked out, I was born in 76.
Yeah.
So that is closer to when I was born than now.
Than now, wow.
That's a really terrifying thing. You think the Second World War was closer to when I was born than it is now, and yet it's depicted as something that's ages ago. The end of the Second World War.
That's
1945,
crazy.
31 years to 76, and now I'm 38.
That is crazy, yeah, yeah.
It's probably the same for you. You're probably almost at that point.
Yeah, 82.
Maybe you're not there yet. So this is quite a famous film. It's just a man, a poor man, lives in a sort of block with his family. He gets a job. It's really difficult. There's lots of unemployment. It's very difficult to get work. The guy who gives out the jobs outside of the city hall, I think you have to put, I don't know how it worked in those days, you have to say what sort of industry you're in, and he comes out with a list. This guy's got a job putting up posters, and he's really pleased. It means he can family can escape from poverty and he can have a life, but he can only have the job if he's got a bicycle to carry the ladder and the posters around. He's got to do it quickly, travel all around town. So he has to go back to the pawn shop, and they give their sheets, the bed sheets they pawn, so they can afford to get the bike back. And he starts his first day of the job. Guess what happens?
Someone steals his bike?
Someone steals a bloody bike. I mean, even it's a problem now. A lot of people talk about bike theft. So it would been good. This bicycle thing, people nicking bicycles, has been going back 70 years now, and there's still not a solution to stop bicycle thieves.
Still not mean.
I mean, there's a lot of problems, but bicycle theft has been a problem. Well, that's 38 plus 1948. That's nearly 70 years, and it was probably going on before that, and no one has found the perfect bike lock.
I wonder who stole the first bike.
Well, if it was a penny farthing, the really big one.
Yeah.
I mean, if you wonder
how long after the invention of the bike,
I wonder who stole the first bike, because could never steal the first bike.
Oh, no.
Because
that'd be like, but I wonder who was the first bike thief.
Someone's nicked my bike. Well, there's only one bike. That guy there's got it.
There's no plaque for that, though, isn't it?
No, yeah.
Is there?
So there's a lot of people nicking bikes. So why this film is so great and such a classic? It's this really simplistic idea. It's almost a way of introducing him. He's trying to find this bike. He's trying to find a person that nicks it. So he gets his friends out, and they go around the whole of this Italian town. They go to the churches, they go to the marketplace. It's just a plot device which allows you to see the whole of Italy.
So go on a bit of an odyssey of
odyssey, yeah, and all the problems and of the day and age, and the man's relationship with his son, and how he gets frustrated, and how he's stuck in poverty, and how there's moments when they go to eat a restaurant, you see the difference in class of the people, and how he can only afford to have a sandwich, how his love for his son is tested at certain points, he's sort of in danger, and then his act of stealing. It's called The Bicycle Thieves, the actual normal version. Americans call it The Bicycle Thief, but I think both is about just moral consciousness and how that changes with desperation. It's a fascinating film. I mean, the version I watched, it's been re-released, I think, at the Curzon now, so I thought I'd watch it. So I think it'd be better to consider it on the big screen.
Yeah.
And not in the proper. I don't know what sort of quality the print was, because on YouTube, I don't think does it justice.
Right.
There's a lot of films, but I just thought I'd... I would try and watch it there. Well, you can watch it there with a translation. I think it's free. I'm not sure. It's quite old now, so it should be. I don't know why the rights things. This is always on a list, like the sort of AFI list and the British Film Institute list, is one of the best films ever.
It got an honorary Oscar, didn't it?
I'm not sure.
I don't know what honorary Oscars are, whether it's just...
It's a real slice of, you know, life of Italy in the sort of depression post-war.
Post-fascism, presumably.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. It's odd, isn't it, when you look at photos of... If we took photos of London now, we went home, they'd be really boring. But automatically, in 50 years' time, they'd be fascinating, because we see all the changes that took place in that time. So it gives you this... You sort of see the whole city, you see how the people act, how the people cycle, the traffic, the... people walking around, the old cars moving around. So it's fascinating in that way, because it's almost documenting the sort of mini history of this town.
I wonder if anybody, just completely just thought plucked out of the air, has filmed the modern day using the old cameras, so that the footage style is exactly the same, so you can do more of a direct comparison.
Yeah, I think it should
be
really interesting.
It would, because with the shifting of the aesthetic, the look of it, you know, the grade of the film and the quality of it, and then going into digital, it's very easy just to them to be so starkly different. It's hard to imagine what it would be like.
I mean, they do those films of London they've done where they've colourised and more colour film in London. And it's odd because you're so used to seeing things.
Yeah.
When you see a man in a bowler hat and old suit, you almost have to see it. It's odd to see him in colour. And there's also a great series of classic, I think, you know, these things you get on Facebook and the internet. They've got iconic photos they've colourised. So they suddenly look alive and modern, and these people seem real.
And actually, the only difference was the way the photo was taken is what's making it seem so long ago.
Yeah. But I really recommend this to watch. It's interesting. I mean,
is it influential in terms of cinema, or is it just a really good example of the
period? Neorealist. So I think at the time, it feels quite modern.
Oh, I studied neorealism at
uni. I don't even know what it really means.
It was a movement in Italy around that time of doing these sort of focusing on the mundanity of human existence rather than the sort of the melodramatic stories of aristocratic people. You know, it's like looking at the normal everyday lives and what it's like to be alive in Italy.
Which is a perfect. I think
very influential upon the films of Mike Leigh, for instance.
Yeah, this is a perfect example. I mean, I think this is a sort of the flagship film for neorealism. In fact, it just seems, and I think it probably was hugely influential because it is. It's not the. There's nothing else around that time like it. Not that I know of. Like the traditional Hollywood films, which are overly stylized and scripted and quite tight, and everyone speaking a certain way. I can't really tell if they're doing that or not because I don't speak Italian, but it feels just, you know, just like a hidden camera following him. It's like a camera, it's like a fly on the wall, not a documentary, but sort of half drama, half documentary. This led to those awful real life documentaries. But I'm glad I watched it. I found it interesting and it held my interest for, even though it was a quite deteriorated version of the film. So it's just, and I think it doesn't seem so. It doesn't seem old compared. The footage looks old, but the film itself does not seem at all old, except for the backgrounds and all that stuff, obviously.
Cool. Well,
I don't even think you should. I don't think you
again,
can.
Again, I don't think it doesn't feel right to do that. It's just, you know, these are parts of history, and
it's great. You can watch these films when you're thinking of a. It's always an effort, isn't it, to watch these films?
Yeah.
Where you think, oh, what film am I going to watch? And you never think, oh, I'm going to get an old classic. Like, we watched those Chaplin films, which are really good.
It's entirely unfair to think, oh, I'm not going to force myself to sit through this because it's going to be slow and boring, because Chaplin, they are not. They race along and they're so much more visually interesting than some other stuff nowadays, you know.
And we watched, what's his name, the sad face guy?
Buster Keaton.
Buster Keaton, the general, which is really interesting.
I want to watch The Great Dictator, actually, which is, that's Chaplin's Hitler comedy, isn't it?
So these are all online. So maybe till next time. And I always feel slightly, you know, reluctant to watch them. But afterwards, I'm always glad I did.
Yes.
So track that down.
If you've got any other, early to mid 20th century movies that you really would recommend and think everyone should have seen, then do let us know. dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. We will be back next week with more films. Keep watching the
films.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.